part of that conversation.
Good afternoon. I'm calling this meeting of the Tax Committee to order on February 2nd. First order of business. Vice Chair Norris, have you had a moment to review the minutes from February 1st?
I have, Chair Gomez, and I will move the minutes from February 1st.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Vice Chair Norris moves that we approve the minutes as submitted from February 1st. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
Thank you.
Motion carries. All right. So we have a few bills up today. We're going to get right into the action. First up is House File 915. Vice Chair Norris is coming up to the podium to explain his bill. Welcome to your committee, Vice Chair Norris. This is your first bill you're presenting, right?
First bill in this committee.
That's what I meant.
I had two others this week. But
Okay, busy week.
I was going to say, Chair Gomez, that the longtime members of this committee will know that I've been presenting this bill for maybe 4 or 5 years. Now I'm back here presenting. I was hoping eventually that you would just pass it so you could get rid of me. And so the fact that I'm here now presenting it as vice chair, I don't know if that means the joke's on me or the joke's on you guys, but here we are.
Well, thank you. We're happy to see you in your new capacity in front of the tax committee. So, and we won't let the GOP members harass you about the lack of donuts, even though we're all feeling the lack of donuts right now.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
Please go ahead and present your bill, Vice Chair Norris.
Thanks, Chair Gomez. So this bill is for a really important tool here in Minnesota called the K-12 Education Tax Credit. It helps low-income families pay for things like after-school and summer programs for their kids, school supplies, musical instruments, a certain portion of computer hardware and software expenses, and covers 75% of those expenses, up to $1,000 per child per year right now. So what's in this bill? First, you'll notice that there's a lot of things being crossed out and it appears new language being added. The bulk of that is actually technical reorganization. Our fantastic nonpartisan staff asked me when we were getting it drafted if they could do some reorganization of the language, and I said sure. So most of that is just technical. But the substantive provisions, there's really four of them. First, we're increasing the income limit for this tax credit. Under the proposed bill, it would start to phase out at $70,000. Currently, it starts to phase out at $33,500, and that has not changed since 1997, so over 25 years, and so it's very out of date. Second, it would index that income limit to inflation moving forward so that we don't find ourselves back in a similar situation again. Another really important change is how we calculate that income. Right now, it uses this definition called household income that literally takes up more than a page of legal paper. And so when we're asking our low-income families to navigate more than a legal page of technical tax jargon, I don't think that makes a lot of sense. So we're shifting to using AGI, like most of our credits of this nature have. And then lastly, given the inflationary environment that we're in, we're increasing the maximum credit per child from $1,000 to $1,500. This is almost identical to what was adopted in the tax conference report last year. The only change is that bump from $1,000 to $1,500 in the maximum credit. And last year I talked about this being educational first aid because of the impact of the pandemic. And that need hasn't changed, and it's even more so since we've had a delay in making these changes to the bill. Research has consistently shown that students in high-poverty schools fell further behind during COVID, and a report from the NWEA, which is a national educational research nonprofit, showed that while students in all income ranges are starting to bounce back, the size of the gaps remains larger in our high-poverty schools. These students simply have more ground to make up, and they have less resources to help them do so. So this is one of the best tools that we have as a state to help them get things like tutoring and academic enrichment. We've historically had bipartisan support for this bill and appreciate our bipartisan group of co-authors again this year. And with that, Chair Gomez, I'll turn it over to our testifiers.
Excellent. And before we move on, Vice Chair Norris, would you like to move your bill to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill?
I would like to move my bill, Chair Gomez.
I'll get this together one of these days, y'all, I promise. Okay, great. So we're going to move to testifiers then. First on my list, I have Aaron Martin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Norris, and members of this committee. My name is Aaron Martin, and I'm the Director of Minnesota After School Advance at Youth Prize. I'm testifying today to thank you for introducing this bill to increase the or to update the Minnesota K-12 education tax credit and show my full support for this bill. Specifically, I'm advocating for those four provisions, so increasing the income limit from $33,500 to $70,000, increasing the maximum credit for a family from $1,000 to $1,500, indexing that income limit to inflation moving forward so we don't end up with a quarter century old income limit ever again, and switching from using that complicated household income definition to calculate eligibility to the federal adjusted gross income. Youth Prize is grateful to Representative Norris for authoring this bill and his leadership on this work in the past, and we'd also like to thank the bipartisan group of co-authors. All these provisions are critically important to helping low-income students, particularly our black and brown students across the state, get the academic support, like tutoring, that they need. In 2022, Minnesota math and reading test scores hit their lowest level in decades. Students in high-poverty school districts had higher learning loss, according to the National Bureau of Economic Research, and we're experiencing K-shaped recovery that Representative Norris just talked a little bit about post-pandemic. So our more affluent students are able to access services like tutoring and are more on track to recover lost learning than their lower income peers, and those students are really being left behind. And this means that after-school programs like tutoring and access to computers are not just luxuries anymore, they're necessities for our young people. The Minnesota After School Advance program that I lead works with families in over 200 cities and serves families in 70 of the 87 counties across the state of Minnesota to help them utilize this tax credit to pay for the cost of educational, fine arts, and performing arts out of school time activities, driver's ed, and computer hardware. We've seen in the past couple of years a 3,500% increase in demand. That's the correct number, 3,500% increase over the past 3 years in our program. And we're leveraging this tax credit to help families access last year, 60,000 hours of tutoring alone. So just paying for tutoring, 60,000 hours in 2022. More than 80% of our students identify as Black or African American, and about 40% of our students are from Minneapolis and St. Paul. So we're really able to help a variety of students from across the state and across demographics access these programs. This tax credit is one of the best tools we have for getting students caught up academically. By increasing the income limit to $70,000 for the maximum credit, regardless of household size, triples the numbers of families eligible to utilize this tax credit. Increasing the max credit that they can claim means families can help their children get even further ahead academically. It also means that families with older students can pay for nearly all of their driver's ed courses that they need in many cases. So right now, oftentimes students are only able to, for example, in tutoring, get 2 or 3 months worth of tutoring. But when we increase the credit, we can really extend that just when students are starting to kind of see those gains, and instead we can really help them get ahead as opposed to kind of stalling out at that point. Shifting to using the federal adjusted gross income to calculate eligibility rather than that more complex household income definition makes it a lot easier for families to get the access to the assistance their students need. I work with a team of community navigators who help families navigate this process and calculate their income, and they can spend a really long time on the phone trying to help families figure out what counts as income and what doesn't count as income. And so even, you know, folks who do this day in and day out find this process to be really taxing and really difficult for them to do. And so we're really excited to hear that we might be able to just point them to a line on their tax return instead, which will make it a lot simpler for them. We're also all very aware of the many impacts inflation has had on families, and many of them who were eligible in the past are no longer eligible because this current definition has not changed since 1997. It's time to index this credit to inflation moving forward so we don't end up with this quarter century old income limit again. In addition to supporting Minnesota students and families, this bill will also have a significant impact on the network of nonprofit organizations and business owners across the state that we work with to help administer these types of programs. The vast majority of organizations we work with are Black and Brown owned, providing culturally relevant services in a lot of cases, and are finding new and creative ways to deliver services to the students who need it most. We'll have one of our service providers who will be sharing her own testimony about this shortly. But to close, I'd again like to thank Madam Chair and Representative Norris and our bipartisan group of co-authors and members of this committee. We urge you to consider supporting this year as we finally move to make critical changes to this tax credit that we need.
Thank you so much, Ms. Martin, and thank you to you and to Youth Prize for all of your work on this over many, many years. We appreciate all that you do for our children in our state. So appreciate your testimony and hoping we can get this done for you guys this year. All right, next up, Sri Ganti. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please just identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee and Representative Norris. My name is Sri Ganti. I am a business owner here in the Twin Cities. I own a business called Mathnasium. It's a math learning center. We work with students K through 12 on their math education. And this is my seventh year working with the business. And I'm so glad we were able to partner with Youth Prize and MAA specifically, because for the last 3 years, we've been able to reach a set of population that wouldn't have been able to afford our services out of pocket. So the K through 12 tax credit, it's a game changer, because it's allowing families to be able to fundamentally access services, after school learning programs that are critical, like we know, for our students. And especially now, in terms of, like Representative Norris alluded to, we are slipping with our math grades. I speak from the lens of math, but then really any after-school program, it's very important. But let me share my experience and why I think all these items that are introduced in terms of changes for the current bill are very critical. For a family of, say, for example, four students and the parents, living on a $33,500 wage, it's on a household adjusted income. First of all, that's so hard to calculate. It's easier if they had to just look at a number on their tax return and know if they qualify or not. That's a big way to express on whether they qualify or not immediately. So that would be something that I strongly support, because it makes a big difference for them to understand. Because what Youth Prize is doing is great. They are giving a loan to make this tax credit accessible. But hey, that assumes that this family is taking on this loan. So it's a responsibility that they need to understand clearly. And to make that happen, it is important that we make it simple for them. So that would be a reason why making that adjustment, the change, is useful. And of course, with the way inflation is, at this point, the current income limit, it's very less. So there are many families who make probably $50,000, which it's not a big shift from where it is, but they still don't qualify because they're out of the phase-out range as well. And and at that point, if we were to adjust that to increase that limit and continue to adjust that to inflation, then it'll allow for more families to be able to take advantage, because they truly deserve it. And as it comes to and going back to that definition too, it helps, because we don't want our partners in the Department of Revenue as well to have to figure out if they truly are eligible or not, because there are a lot of families who currently take advantage of this who may be having to substantiate why they qualify at this point. So just being able to make that clear will make it easier as well. And with a service like Mathnasium, for example, like the other testifier was alluding to, they are able to probably get about 3 months of service without anything out of pocket. We try to add additional scholarships, and with a small copay, allow the family to be able to extend that service. But then, with the reality of how things are, being able to extend that to $1,500 per year per child, well, just allow that to be extended further. And that makes a difference. As we are heading into the end of school year and getting into summer months, this is the time we can make a difference for the students. And this is not just this year. We have years worth of recovery to do for most of these students. And making this change now, and just like Representative Norris had mentioned, this is my second time testifying on this. So I'm hoping that we are able to make that difference and together work towards helping more families that are able to benefit from the service so that we have a stronger youth, and because that's the future that we want to be sure that we're supporting. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Gonti, and thank you to you also for your work with young people. We appreciate it. All right, is there anybody else who wishes to testify who's with us today? Not seeing anybody. Mr. Flowers, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I appreciate we want all kids to get tutoring and education.
Could you just introduce yourself for the record before you, and then go back to your testimony just so that we have it?
Okay, I'm sorry. Al Flowers, and I'm just testifying as an African-American. When you're talking about these things, and I help hold here a book called The United Black Legislative Agenda, and when you're talking about how kids are behind, it's in this book of what African-American kids are going through. So when I'm glad to be here. Chair Gomez is my representative for my neighborhood, so I feel comfortable coming to say that our community is struggling. African-American kids, when you talk about black and brown kids, that's them African-American kids. Nobody wants to say that name. So we got, that's what I wanna say here when I look at 28% of black students, third grade, is beneath the efficiency rate. 82% white is passing, 48 for all Minnesotans. Eighth grade, we had 18%, and we had 70% graduation rate. So in our community, I know our community don't have the knowledge of what's happening here right now. And so I'm sitting here, I came to really just talk to my representative. But when I hear this, I'd like to see an African American. I'm talking about one that looked like me sitting here talking about this. When you talk about the increase go from 30-some thousand to 70,000, all that, when those kids that's in that 30,000, it's still failing. And so I want to say to this committee, and I got to get our community, we got to get engaged, because nobody's going to say it, nobody's going to speak up if we don't do it. So I'm glad I'm here. I'm walking for my community. I'm walking with this black legislative agenda, and I would expect some African American, we got educators, they should be here saying this, what I'm saying. I shouldn't have to do this work here, but I'm saying it to this committee, and I go back and tell my community this is what's happening. I got all the papers there. I can do some work and reading through it, and I say it. But when you talking about these kids that's failing, you gotta understand it's the African American kid. I say ADOS, a descendant of an enslaved of community that is in this struggle, that don't get their voice heard enough. So I'm speaking up today, and I will speak up, continue to speak up. I think it's a good thing. We should be trying to do everything to educate, but we have to be at this table talking about what's happening to our kids, because we're the one dying in our community every day. And so that's what I want to say to this committee. This is just my first time appearing. Now I'm going to study what you're saying and make sure that we are a part of it. We're a part of it, that you're using our plight, and then we don't know what's happening. So that's why I had to come step up and speak on this. It's a big deal to me. Just this little short time, I got educated. And I'm saying our name. I'm an African American. I'm a descendant of enslaved people in this country. And I want you to know it, and we are here, and come to our lobby day on March 3rd. Just a quick promo. But thank you. I support what you're doing, but you got to talk. We the ones failing. Our kids are suffering. So this is how I'm gonna say it today, and I will be back. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flowers.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else wishing to testify? Not seeing any, we'll move to member questions. First up, Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Norris, for bringing this bill forward. You know, I think regardless, you know, the moving up of the eligible income is important. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, we look at education, we look at health and how that all potentially works. But, you know, just wanted to question the staff, particularly to say kind of how would the bill change from a point of cost if we were just to remove the income limit on this?
We can go to I don't know, is it Ms. Templin? That might be something that she might not have done the analysis on, I would imagine, because I don't think that we usually would do that analysis without instruction from us. Yeah. But I'll pass it over to her. It might be kind of something we need to follow up on. But Ms. Templin.
Madam Chair, Representative Swedzinski. Yes, thank you for the question. In my experience, I have not seen an estimate for the K-12 credit that completely removes the income, the household income parameters. So that is something I can look into and get back to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just my point in that is really just a foundation. You know, when you're dealing with certain areas of subject matter, particularly when it comes to kids that are at need, right? You know, so kids that are, whether they're from higher income families or lower income families, regardless of that economic impact that those families have, you know, this is a credit that's really focused on kids and their advances and their ability to, you know, be educated and tuned into better fit within parameters of education and improve. And, you know, I appreciate that we are increasing it, but, you know, regardless, a kid from a higher value family versus a lower value family, we should all, you know, treat them the same in the opportunities. You know, I was reminded from the fellow that just came down. I forget what your name was, sir.
Mr. Flowers.
I appreciate that. And, you know, you had mentioned one of the big things is that how a lot of folks maybe don't know about this. And, you know, if you think about from an influential part of a community, you know, oftentimes it's maybe folks that have a business or doing something different. If they know about a program because they're personally participating in it with their kids, they'd be more apt to potentially talk about it to make sure that maybe folks that are employees or whatever down the economic ladder would potentially know so that their kids could get some help. And, you know, so it'd be my hope that, you know, as these things are being addressed that, you know, especially when it comes to education, we should be less focused, especially when you think of a program like this that is more of a pyramid. You have a lot of incomes that are down here, and when you get to the top, you have less and less people. And it's not like it costs more the more the income rate, but it's just it's the value, and sometimes it might be a cheap spend to open it up, you know, across the board so that people understand those opportunities that are out there so for the betterment of their family and their kids. So that's what I had to say about that.
Thank you, Representative Swedzinski. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. On the bill, on page 3, lines 3.28 through 3.3, I support the bill, I'm on the bill, but that piece is kind of concerning to me on this bill or any other bill. Because what happens, the tails just go out to 2007. You start compounding the inflator on there, and this thing is going to cost a lot of money. I don't like inflators because I think it makes us lazy. We get the bill put into place, and if you got a good program, come back in a couple of years, and we might put it up a little bit. But this just puts it on autopilot, and you say, well, you can repeal it. Well, around this place, the only thing tougher than passing a law is repealing one. So as we move and we start doing the numbers, Madam Chair, this is very small. This is a small one. But this is going to affect your tails down the road, and I'm hoping we can kind of watch inflators. If people have a program that's good, we will raise it in most cases. So just a bit of caution here that we have to be, you know, everybody wants inflators. We got to be careful on those.
All right. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Norris, for bringing this bill. We've had many go-rounds on this over the years, so I look forward to today's amendment discussion. But I did have a question on the changing the definition of qualifying expenses. And I just want to clarify for the record, because I did look at it. It looks very similar to what the old language was. But yet in the fiscal note, it says the changes in the definition of qualifying expenses could affect which expenses are eligible for the credit, and the impact of these definitional changes is unknown. And that just concerns me. So do you have any more insight on how the qualifying, changing the qualified expense definition is going to impact what actually qualifies?
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and Representative Robbins, for the question, and thanks for your leadership back in 1997 and helping to establish this tax credit. You and I both know kind of the ins and outs of this tax credit. So when I was reviewing the revenue estimate this morning, that language also jumped out to me. And it wasn't clear to me whether that was just because the folks over at the Department of Revenue weren't, you know, if they actually thought that there were some changes in here, or if they just didn't, you know, fully appreciate that what was at least attempting to be done was just a technical reorganization of some of the language. Since we just got the revenue estimate this morning, I haven't had a chance to follow up on that particular nuance. But, you know, I know at least my intent, and you know, we can maybe talk to our nonpartisan staff, too, as well. The intent with any of those changes was not to change what is eligible for this credit, but to simply kind of clean up some of the language and make it more clear.
Thank you, Representative Norris. And I think Mr. Williams might have something to contribute to this discussion, so we'll go to him.
Chair Gomez, Representative Robbins, you know, I haven't heard from the Department of Revenue if they have specific thoughts about why potentially this reorganization of the definitions section in Clause 1 would change expenses that are eligible. Sort of my read on this is that there is not a substantive change. And, you know, having worked on this, I worked on this language a little bit with the reviser just because in kind of drafting in this area in the past, I've noticed that this clause in particular is very long and difficult to follow. So the intent here was hopefully just to clean this up and make it easier to read and draft it in the future. But maybe I can follow up with the Department of Revenue and see if they had specific ideas about stuff that might be changing or definitions that might be changing and, you know, ways to tighten it up. And I think that, you know, potentially if the committee thinks that there are substantive changes here, it's probably best just to take the definition change out. But I think that, you know, if potentially we can make it a little bit clearer without changing the underlying meaning, that might be an opportunity to do that if this bill moves forward.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that discussion and just look forward to hearing from you when you've talked to the department.
All right. Anything further, Representative Robbins?
I do have an amendment. I don't know if it's in order right now.
I think it's up to you. You can, it's the taxes committee is kind of the Wild West. We don't have a 24-hour rule, so you can offer an amendment whenever you'd like.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry. Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I had a question for the underlying bill. I can wait.
Okay. Well, I mean, Representative, if that's okay with you, Representative Robbins, if we go to Chair Joachim. Go ahead, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just sure. Want to get this out of the way, too, before we run to the amendment. First, thank Representative Norris for carrying this and for helping me carry this when I had this bill up. I really do appreciate it. My question actually is maybe to staff, just reminding myself that don't we have a K-12 education subtraction credit that's already not linked to income that everyone can take?
I'm going to look over to Mr. Williams for that one.
Chair Gomez and Representative Joachim, yes. So we have a subtraction for K-12 expenses. The expenses that qualify for that subtraction are the same as the credit, except tuition for school tuition is also allowed as part of the subtraction. And as you said, that subtraction is not income tested. It's not. It doesn't have this income-based phase out. So it's just allowed. There's it's up to $2,500 per dependent in grades 7 to 12, and $1,625 for dependents in grades K through 6. And I've got a short subject that I think is in your committee packet that talks about both the subtraction and the credit that has more information on both.
Representative Joachim.
Quick follow-up, then maybe for a question for the bill author. Then is this is a directed credit to students that are struggling, and I know you've worked in this field before. Can you maybe take less than a minute to maybe describe some of the families you work with this really directed credit to help people expand their education opportunities?
Vice Chair Norris.
Yeah, Chair Gomez and Chair Joachim, and thanks. As you mentioned, you've been one of our authors in the past for this bill, and so I'm grateful for your leadership on that. Yeah, you know, I look at this as a real kind of targeted intervention. The reality is that a lot of our more affluent students are able to get access to things like tutoring and academic enrichment without an aid like this tax credit provides. And, you know, Representative Swedzinski's comment is one that, you know, I understand completely where he's coming from. I think the challenge that we always wrestle with as policymakers is how do we best direct our scarce resources as a state? And I think making sure that we use this tool to make sure everybody has access to that tutoring or that academic enrichment for those who don't necessarily have their own resources to get it is an important thing, and that's why in the past we've had an upper income limit on this particular credit.
Thank you, Representative Norris. Representative Joachim, anything further?
No, thank you, and thank you to staff for putting that in the packet that I hadn't quite gotten to yet. You can always I always predict the questions I'm going to ask, so thank you.
Great, thank you. So we're going to go back to Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I would like to move the A2 amendment to the bill.
All right, Representative Robbins moves the A2 amendment. Could you please describe the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So basically, this amendment keeps the original organization of the qualifying expenses just structurally, but I agree with Representative Norris that if we go with his underlying language, it's probably still fine. But the real change in this amendment is that it puts tuition in the tax credit. Right now, as was stated, we have had a tax deduction for all these same expenses that includes tuition, and that same allowable expense is prohibited in the credit. And I find that disturbing because I think low-income families should be able to use the credit for exactly what middle and upper-income families can use it for. And I have worked on this for years. When I first worked on this bill, when it was passed in 1997, we had tuition in the credit so low-income families would be treated equally with the people who got the subtraction. And it was pulled out in the final overnight negotiation. I'll never forget it. And I have been in different ways trying to get that piece back in this bill for 25 years. And I really think it's wonderful that low-income families can use the credit for tutoring and for music lessons and for driver's ed and all those other things. But the one piece this bill will not permit them to use it for is tuition. And if they want to use their credit to send their child to another school, if their school happens to not be meeting their child's needs, I don't know why we are prohibiting them from that. So that's the nature of the amendment. I would hope it would be a friendly amendment, but I know we've discussed that in the past, and it constantly is rejected. So I just am here to plead my case one more year. And I just want to cite a couple more statistics. The National Association of Education Progress Statistics did come out last fall, and it showed that basically because of the school closures during the pandemic, our state, we had lost, quoting the Star Tribune, nearly two decades of progress in reading and math. Scores dropped 10 points in math and 7 points in reading since 2019. So 55% statewide of our students are not proficient in math. 49% are not proficient in reading. And it's much worse for low-income students and students of color. 20% of black students and 22% of Hispanic students and 19% of American Indian students were proficient in math, compared to 54% of white students. 31% of black and Hispanic students and 28% of American Indian students were proficient in reading, compared to 59% of white students. 371 of our school districts and 371 schools and 15 entire districts were going to need support, extra support to put kids on track. Members, we are having a crisis. And if low-income families want to have the opportunity to take this tax credit and use it for tuition, I do not know why we are denying them that opportunity. So that's the amendment, and I welcome your discussion, and I'd like to ask for a roll call.
All right. Representative Robbins has requested a roll call on the amendment. There will be a roll call. First, before we go to member discussion, I'll go to Representative Norris.
Thanks, Chair Gomez, and thank you, Representative Robbins. You're right, we've had this conversation a number of times. We could probably both give each other's talking points at this point. And I do appreciate your underlying concern about making sure that all of our students in Minnesota have a high-quality education. But one of the things we know from the research is that those gaps don't necessarily just open up in the regular school day. In fact, what the research shows is that oftentimes it's that out-of-school time, especially summer, where the largest gaps open up. I've got it's probably too small for everybody to see, but I've got a chart here, and I can share it maybe with the committee afterward. It's from a peer-reviewed journal, and it shows two lines. It shows academic progress for our middle-income students and our progress for our lower-income students. And what we see is that, for the most part, the two groups track fairly closely during the school year. And then during the summer, our middle-income and higher-income students continue to tick up, and our lower-income students actually fall back down. And that's because they don't have access to the same sorts of enrichment opportunities that their more affluent peers do during the summer. There's certainly space here at the legislature for a discussion around how we want to make sure that every young person has a high-quality educational experience in the K-12 classroom. Chair Youakim's committee is a great place to have that. This tool here that we have in the tax realm has been focused on out-of-school time and making sure that all of our students, regardless of income level, have access to those critical out-of-school time opportunities. I think that's why we've been able to get bipartisan support for this in the past. The K-12 policy space is complicated and fraught. I think everybody can get behind the notion of making sure that everybody has access to tutoring, music lessons, driver's ed. And for that reason, members, I would urge a no vote on this amendment.
Is there any further discussion to Representative Robbins's A2 amendment? Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just, you know, I would just rise in support of Representative Robbins' amendment. To me, it's, you know, we really don't have to be, we can be agnostic on whether this is, you know, helping private school or public school. You know, I mean, the goal is this. It's already got parameters that this doesn't go to higher income people, even though I think it should. But, you know, the foundation of this is, you know, what's best for the kid. You know, this is a tax credit. This isn't saying this is what you have to do. These are voluntary decisions that parents are making because they feel it's best for the child. And do we want the state of Minnesota to partner with those parents of lower income, of minority status, that may not feel that, you know, the options that are available to them financially are the only options that they should be able to take advantage of? And, you know, this is a self-determined issue. This is a, you know, do we believe that parents have in mind what's best for their kids? And that might be public school, that might be private school. This committee shouldn't care. It doesn't have to. It says, hey, let's trust parents with the things that count most. And we're going to see a lot of spending this session in a vast majority of issues. We're going to hear over and over, let's let families determine, let's let communities determine. I think this is kind of an easy one. Representative Robbins, you know, Mr. Flowers, you brought up some great points. I'd be interested actually to hear what if he's got an opinion on this. I was moved by his testimony earlier. I don't know if he would be willing to come down if he's got a thought on this amendment or not. But
I think we're going to just go ahead and have a discussion as a committee on the amendment, but thank you. Anything further, Representative Swedzinski?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Lissagard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess I see the $1,500 and I'm confused because isn't private schools between $20,000 and $30,000 a year? And what if they need the $1,500, it's not even close?
Depends on where in the state.
Madam Chair, I don't know if we could kind of find out what the average is. Is what I've been told is it's, you know, 10 to 30 to 40 thousand, depending on which one. But if they need my I guess my point, Madam Chair, is if they need the $1,500, right? they sure can't afford the high cost of a private education, which I wish everybody could afford. But that's not the reality that we live in. And this helps the people that need it the most. And for me, if you can afford to do bypass the public education for whatever reason, and I appreciate that, but I think it needs to stay exactly where it is, and I oppose this.
To Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Most private schools are under $10,000, and this would certainly not allow a family to afford private school tuition. What this does is it allows families to provide for the match that they're usually required for if they get a scholarship. Because a lot of private schools provide scholarships to families, but require families to have some skin in the game, and this would enable them to take advantage of that. And if I can also, Madam Chair, go back to some of the other points. So first of all, I do appreciate the facts that there's a lot of learning loss over summer, and I agree with that. But these stats are from tests that are taken at the end of the school year, when schools have been in session all year and kids have had the maximum opportunity to lose or gain their, they haven't had the learning loss yet. And it's this achievement gap while they are in school, measured in April or May, that we are talking about. It doesn't reflect the learning loss. And secondly, it was said that the point of this was to target these extracurricular activities. That is not true, members. There has always been, since the 1940s, I believe, a tax deduction that includes tuition in this state that has been upheld by the courts. We created this credit for low-income families in the late 1990s so that they would have the same opportunities as middle and upper income families. And the intention was always to include tuition in that, always. And it was taken out at the last minute, and we have been fighting to put it back ever since. This is an equity issue, members. We talk about equity all the time. Why we are denying low-income families the same opportunity that middle and upper-income families have to use the tax credit how they see fit. They don't want to use it for tuition. They don't have to. They can still do all the enrichment, all the music lessons, all of that. We're not saying they have to use it for that. But they should be given the same opportunity to use it for the same group of qualifying expenses. That is what this amendment is about, members. I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. I was just going to clarify to the point Representative Robbins was making. Even if the test is at the end of the year when the students have had the opportunity to make those gains, even if the students make the same gains over the course of that school year, if one is starting the school year from a lower point because they had learning loss that previous summer, and one is starting from a higher point because they were able to participate in academic enrichment, at the end of the year, if those students have the same amount of gain over the academic year, at the end of the year on the test, the higher income student is still going to test higher than the lower income student because the lower income student is starting from a lower base. And so that's why a tool like this to help make sure that during the out-of-school time, especially the summer, those lower income students have access to academic enrichment is so critical, and why I think we should embrace the bipartisan support behind the original bill and hopefully make sure that this is accessible to more low-income families in the state.
All right. Thank you, Representative Norris. We're going to go to the author of the amendment for a last word, and then we're going to move to a vote. So, Representative Robbins.
Thank you. And members, I just want to be clear. I really want tuition in this, but I do support everything else Representative Norris is doing. So I don't want that to be lost in this discussion. We need to raise the income limits. We need to have the thresholds up. We need to increase the amount of the credit. I am on board with that because I want to empower families to have more resources to make these choices for low-income families. And I honestly don't think we need to expand the deduction. I think it's fine. I really think targeting this for low-income families is essential, and I will support the Norris bill. I just think it's missing a very critical piece that matters for low-income families for equity. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. And with that, we're going to move to a vote on the amendment. Ms. Sabas will take the roll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. Chair Gomez.
Gomez, no.
Chair Gomez, no. Vice Chair Norris.
No.
Vice Chair Norris, no.
Minority Lead Davids?
No.
Minority Lead Davids, no. Representative Egbaje?
No.
Representative Egbaje, no. Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Anderson, yes. Representative Brand?
No.
Representative Brand, no. Representative Elkins?
No.
Representative Elkins, no. Representative Howard?
No.
Representative Howard, no. Representative Joy?
Yes.
Representative Joy, yes. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, yes. Representative Lee?
No.
Representative Lee, no. Representative Lislegarde?
No.
Representative Lislegarde, no. Representative Olson B?
Yes.
Representative Olson B, yes. Representative Olson L?
No.
Representative Olson L, no. Representative Pinto?
No.
Representative Pinto, no. Representative Robbins?
Yes.
Representative Robbins, yes. Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Smith, no. Representative Swidzinski?
Yes.
Representative Swidzinski, yes. Representative Wiener?
Yes.
Representative Wiener, yes. Representative Witte?
Yes.
Representative Witte, yes. Representative Joachim?
No.
Representative Joachim, no.
There being 8 ayes and 13 nays, the amendment does fails and is not adopted. All right, so we actually have some other folks on the list just to discuss the underlying bill before we move on. Representative Olson B? No. Okay, sorry. Representative Lee?
Very quickly, Madam Chair, I want to thank Representative Norris for introducing, for carrying this bill. I am also a co-author because, I understand how important this is. My parents were actually volunteer tax preparers for low-income families, and so I was able to see a lot of the families who were able to benefit from this. So thank you for simplifying the income measurements and also increasing the income qualifications. I think it is really important that we, you know, add the inflator because, you know, as we see now, sometimes tax bills don't pass because of political winds, and our families cannot wait for that. And so thank you, Rep. Norris.
Representative Lee. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This actually ends up connecting to some of the discussion we had about the amendment. I'm going to play the type here and just point out that this has education starting at age 5, and so just to point out, and we had that whole discussion about the achievement gap, and we know that our K-12 schools actually do an amazing job of closing the gap. It's bigger at kindergarten than it is at grade 12, but you think about everything that urges against that. So not necessarily, Representative Norris, this is a great great bill and great K-12 credit, but I do want to note that we want to be thinking about education for younger kids. We spend 10 times as much money once a child turns 5, no wonder we have the gaps at kindergarten. So maybe that's something, Representative Robbins, I know you've been pushing for to have greater early care and learning spending going on for young kids, and want to make sure we're keeping an eye on that, whether we do it through this credit or another means. But there is that's where the gap comes from, is before kindergarten. Thanks.
Thank you for that, Representative Pinto. I'm not seeing any further member questions or comments, so just we'll go back to Representative Norris for some final comments.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Gomez. I'll make it brief since we've had a good discussion on this. And just to reiterate, I think the importance of this, I'm glad that, you know, there is this bipartisan support behind the importance of this tool for our families here in Minnesota, and hope that we can all work together to make this the year we finally get it over the finish line.
At last. All right. Thank you, Representative Norris. And with that, Representative Norris renews his motion that House File 915 is be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and it's laid over. Thank you. All right, next up, Representative Egbaje with House File 526. Uh, All right. Welcome to your committee. Go ahead whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Should I move the bill first?
Yes, that would be great. Representative Agbaje moves that House File 526 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also have an amendment. Can I move the amendment first so the bill's in the shape that I wanted it?
Absolutely. Representative Agbaje is moving the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that she would like. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say no. All right, motion carries. So to House File 526 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. So this bill is basically to address some of the discrepancies in the tax code related to single-member LLCs. So these are LLCs that have only one owner, one person is in them. Limited liability companies are flexible entities that can be taxed as partnerships or corporations, or in the case of single-member LLCs, taxes are dealt with through the owner's income tax return, but we are taking out that section of the bill. So the rest of the bill will just deal with the sales tax exemption. Single-member LLCs are considered disregarded entities under the federal code and are eligible for some tax benefits similar to other LLCs. But in Minnesota, while other LLCs have access to those benefits, single-member LLCs are, for some reason, excluded. The gap creates a trap for unwary single-member LLC owners who assume that all types of LLCs will be treated the same under both the federal and state tax codes. So this bill would establish basic fairness and consistency for single-member LLC owners who are often sole proprietors. It does this by allowing a sale of tangible goods between the sole proprietor and the disregarded LLC to qualify for the sales tax exemption. I'll just acknowledge that the tax law section of the Minnesota State Bar Association brought this bill forward and wanted to address this issue. And Brian Lake is one of my testifiers who will have more information for the committee. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Representative Agbaje. So we're going to move over to testifiers now. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lake. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. My name is Brian Lake. I operate a law firm in Minneapolis, and I represent the Minnesota State Bar Association. For those of you who don't know, the MSBA is a voluntary professional association, and our members consist of about 13,000 attorneys throughout the state. And this is this proposal was crafted by the tax law section of the MSBA. It's not designed to benefit tax lawyers. It's actually designed to benefit people who can't afford to hire them. So what we're trying to do here is just level the playing field and make sure that there's equal treatment of various types of LLCs as far as sales taxes that are charged on transfers of tangible property. So LLCs are very flexible. You can elect to have them taxed for income tax purposes in various ways as a corporation, as a partnership, or if there's only one owner of the LLC, they could elect what we call a single-member LLC. They could be elect to be taxed as a disregarded entity, which, as members of this committee probably know, is just kind of a fiction that the IRS made up, and we pretend that the entity doesn't exist for income tax purposes, and the business tax issues are dealt with on the owner's income tax return. So this is a very attractive option. That single-member LLC option is very attractive for a sole proprietor who doesn't want to deal with the headaches of having to file a separate corporate tax return. The problem is if you know you've got maybe an unsophisticated person setting one of these up, they don't have the resources to hire a tax advisor, they may not realize that they're walking into a trap with a sales tax and a transfer of tangible property. So when I talk about a transfer of tangible property, I think the most common example would be someone starts an LLC, that person happens to have, say, $5,000 or $10,000 worth of office equipment, they transfer that to the LLC. Now, if it's a multi-member LLC, that's just considered, that transaction is considered a reorganization, it's not a taxable event. However, if it's a disregarded entity, a single-member LLC, sales tax is due on that transfer. And so, like I said, if you've got someone who's not real knowledgeable or tax savvy, doesn't have the resources for tax advice on the front end, they may suddenly find themselves with a large sales tax bill that they really weren't expecting. So that's what we're trying to deal with this bill, is make sure that no matter what the tax classification is for the LLC, they're all treated exactly the same for purposes of a sales tax on transfer of tangible property. So essentially what we're doing is trying to align the law with what an average Minnesotan's intuitive expectation would be, which is if they own some tangible property and they give it to a business that they own, that shouldn't be a taxable event. So pretty simple and straightforward bill. Madam Chair, I'm happy to take questions if there are any.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lake, for your testimony. Are there any member questions or discussion? Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first thing I thought of with this bill, House File 526, is that it closed a loophole, but then I'd have to reprimand myself for saying that. That would be bad, so I didn't say that. I hope I didn't say that out loud. That being said, Representative, thank you very much for this bill. This cleans up a lot of stuff, and I hope everyone on this committee can support it.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Anyone else? All right. Looks like that was a quick and easy one. So with that, Representative Agbaje renews her motion, and House File 526, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Agbaje. Finally up on the calendar today is House File 810 from Representative Brand. Welcome to your committee, Representative Brand. I understand you have an author's amendment, the A3.
Yes.
We move the bill first? Okay. Sorry, we're moving the bill first. Okay. So Representative Brand is going to move that House File 810 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And then to the A3 author's amendment.
Yeah, the A3 author's amendment is actually some cleanup language specifically dealing with, instead of just pointing out one company that does some of the laboratory standards, we're just saying that there are multiple, and we just want to make sure that there is a laboratory standard that's being used for the line 1.24, some standards by a nationally recognized testing lab. Underwriters Laboratory is one of them. But and then also the other language is more in line with the bill language amended from last year. Representative Akam had the bill, and Senator Senjum had the bill in the Senate. And so this is just adopting that language and making it a little bit cleaner.
All right. Is there any discussion to the A3? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A3, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, motion carries, and the bill is in the form that you'd like. Representative Brand, please go ahead and tell us about your bill.
Thank you very much for making the bill as good as it can be. I would like to talk to you a little bit about this piece of climate action tax credit legislation that I propose here. It's basically kind of like our state's reaction to the Inflation Reduction Act of last year. There are a lot of different things that are in my bill that directly align with the federal policy of the Inflation Reduction Act. And this will give folks, I think, maybe an incentive if they were kind of teetering, but also hopefully it'll also provide more incentive to folks who are not able to quite reach that that affordability range to get to that range where they can actually start doing some, either some efficiencies in their homes, taking the next step in buying a vehicle, a charging unit, air source heat pump, things like that of that nature. You know, I think it's just important that we have this conversation as we're talking about opportunities to invest in Minnesota going forward. And so this is my bill. You know, if you look at it, there's a mechanism. It sunsets at the end of 2027, so this isn't one that goes too far forward. And what it does is it basically offers the consumer in Minnesota up to three different categories of options. Pick two, get up to $2,000 in tax credit for the year. So that is my bill, and I honestly don't have, I don't know that I have anybody testifying, but let's check the audience and see.
All right, let's do that. Is there anybody who wishes to testify, all right, on House File 810? Great, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Good afternoon. My name is Anna Johnson, and I'm a senior public affairs associate with Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a nonpartisan nonprofit, and for the last 30 years, we've been working at the intersection of science, policy, and education to advance policy solutions to equitably achieve a carbon-neutral economy, and we're grateful for your partnership in this effort. I'm here to express Fresh Energy's support for Representative Fran's bill, HF 810, as amended, which will help residents across Minnesota more easily afford a range of technologies that will lead to meaningful energy efficiency improvements, improved air quality, and reduced greenhouse gas emissions. Buildings account for about 40% of emissions economy-wide, while the transportation sector is the single largest source of greenhouse gas emissions. As we look out across our landscape, most buildings that exist today will still be standing in 2050. That means that to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to net zero by 2050, in order to avoid the worst impacts of climate change, we will need to adapt and update our homes and buildings to use clean energy and to be more energy efficient. Moving from gas-powered to electric vehicles is critical to reducing emissions associated with transportation. This bill will help Minnesotans accomplish all these goals by providing tax incentives for a wide range of technologies. Items such as induction stoves and electric vehicles come with the added benefits of improving indoor and outdoor air quality, respectively. Additionally, providing Minnesotans incentives to adopt efficient electric appliances will help insulate families from volatile price fluctuations associated with fossil fuels, leading to lower, more stable monthly utility costs. The variety of technologies covered will help individual families tailor these tax credits to their specific needs. HF 810 will help Minnesotans take climate action in their own homes and help us to be a more resilient state. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you to Representative Brand for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Yeah, please go ahead and come up. Remember to introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is George Damien. I'm Director of Government Affairs for Clean Energy Economy Minnesota, also known as SEEM. SEEM is an industry-led nonpartisan nonprofit organization representing the business voice of energy efficiency and clean energy business in Minnesota. We work to educate Minnesotans about the economic benefits of transitioning to a clean energy economy where all Minnesota businesses and citizens will thrive. Our business membership is comprised of nearly 50 clean energy companies, ranging from startup businesses all the way up to Fortune 500 and 100 companies that employ tens of thousands of Minnesotans. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 810 as amended, providing Minnesotans with a refundable tax credit for energy efficiency and home improvement updates. This bill will help Minnesotans access and improve the ways they can control their energy use and costs with energy efficiency and innovative solutions now and into the future. It is a thoughtful and modest approach that takes meaningful action to assist everyday Minnesotans with the investments they are making or considering making to improve their properties with modern energy technologies. Additionally, this bill has the added benefit of supporting Minnesota's energy efficiency job sector. Today, over 42,200 Minnesotans work in energy efficiency, comprising nearly 75% of our state's almost 58,000 clean energy jobs. Making these energy improvements more accessible to more Minnesotans will continue to help grow the energy efficiency sector of Minnesota's clean energy economy. We thank you as a branch for bringing this bill forward. It provides a common sense approach to help Minnesotans access innovative energy solutions that deliver increased comfort and provide additional individuals with more control over their energy use and costs. This is a good bill for Minnesota energy consumers, but also supporting local energy jobs. Thank you for taking the opportunity to support this bill.
All right. Thank you so much for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the public who wishes to testify? All right. I'm not seeing any. First, we're going to go to Representative Robbins, and then we'll come to you.
An amendment.
Okay. Is it okay if she goes first?
That's fine.
Okay. We'll just go to Representative Robbins. She's on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Tebke.
Oh, Brand.
Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies, Representative Brand. Sorry.
That's okay.
Honestly, members, I am struggling today. I know it's obvious. We just laid over a bill that would give a $1,500 tax credit capped at $70,000 for low-income families for education expenses. This bill gives a $2,000 tax credit capped at $130,000 for clean energy. And the phase out on that education credit for low-income families is $1 loss for every $4 in AGI. This one is $1 for every 30. We have got to get our priorities in order, members. And I'm for the transition to renewables. I support a lot of the intention of this bill. But when we have limited money as a committee, I am asking you all to consider where we are putting our priorities. And with great respect, because I do think you're well-intended and that this is going well, we have two very different bills in front of us, and the fiscal note for the energy tax credit we're considering is $48 million in the first year, $50 million in the second, not talking about the tails even. The education bill we just discussed, $11 million. Both years. I just, as much as I want to support this, I want to encourage the committee to put our priorities on the education credit when we have limited dollars. And I'm sure Representative Norris would be happy to increase the limits and the phase outs. And I hope that as a body, as we move forward in this discussion, putting our bill together, we consider that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to offer up the A4 amendment. If you feel that's an appropriate time to do such things.
Sounds good to me. So Representative Swedzinski is moving the A4 amendment.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. The A4 amendment really just kind of allows Minnesota industry. So we have a lot of manufacturers within the state of Minnesota that manufacture wood-burning stoves, boilers, the rest. That really are major job creators right here in the state of Minnesota. And this just ensures that, you know, if folks are planning on upgrading their resource acquisition, so they would be upgrading their wood stove from a non-potential EPA standardized wood stove, that if they're moving into the federally recognized EPA standards, which is will decrease the amount of particulate matter, reduce the amount of smoke available to the public air, that we would count that towards that. Because, you know, if our goal is simply reduction, one thing you need to remember is that over 3 billion people, 3 billion people worldwide burn wood and dung to cook their meals. So if this is about reducing particulate matter, wood will be burned in northern Minnesota. Wood will be burned across our state. This gives us an opportunity to say, hey, if you're going to be upgrading or you need to upgrade, I mean, no one wrote a novel about curling up next to the person you love to a ground source heat pump.
I read that one.
Right? Sorry, Matt. Keep the romance alive and support my amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Swedzinski. So to the amendment, I think Representative Pinto, did you have some? You're good?
Not in this, Madam Chair.
Okay, great. Representative Brand.
Well, that's a hard act to follow, talking about curled up next to something with this weather outside. The warmer the better, right? You know, a little bit about myself. I grew up in a household that had wood stove heat, and that wood stove was a welded box of metal that was created by somebody. And when my family bought the house, that was just there. And my grandparents actually used a potbelly stove that my great-great-grandparents actually purchased in their home. And so those aren't very efficient ways to burn the wood. And I know that there are other families across our entire state who are going through that situation. And so this might offer an incentive for them to say, hey, you know what? These are the options available. I like this option. Let's go with it. I know that in Representative Scraba's district in Tower, Minnesota, there is a manufacturer that actually produces a wood stove that actually they claim is 40% better than what the EPA standards are. And so there are opportunities out there for homegrown jobs, you know. And to go back to the actual bill itself, well, in Representative Listigar's district, they have folks that are making photovoltaic cells, right? That was one of the things that you worked on in the past. And so these are opportunities to work with mom-and-pop installation shops and then also working with these small businesses to support economy in that area. So, yes, I would consider this to be a friendly amendment, and I thank you for bringing it up.
All right. So Representative Swedzinski has moved the A4 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say no. All right, motion carries and A4 is adopted. So to general discussion to the bill, Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to thank Representative Robbins for pointing out the argument on the bill we had regarding private schools and so forth. I mean, if they can afford a private school, they certainly don't need a credit. Well, if somebody can afford a Tesla, do they really need a credit? You know, first of all, this bill will have no effect on climate whatsoever, zero. But I'm kind of intrigued to support this because now you're supporting subsidizing rich Tesla owners with no limits. I mean, I kind of like that in a way. But, you know, it's very interesting that in this bill, people can spend whatever they want on a car. I mean, does a Tesla owner really need a tax credit, really? And I don't see too many lower-income people buying electric vehicles. So just some thoughts, but I'd like to thank Representative Robbins for pointing that glaring inconsistency out. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just briefly, I was just going to respond to Representative Robbins and just thinking about the link between these two bills. I think it is good to link them because long after we're all gone, I mean, we know there's climate effects right now, but it's only increasing. And so, in fact, it's our kids who need us the most to be taking action on this. And just a reminder, I mean, the U.S. Department of Defense is talking about how this is a major national security issue. It's only going to get worse. And I'll just note that, you know, we spend a lot and should on education of young people. I'm not aware of us doing this, and this is action. We're building up action from the base. So it does make sense to me that we'd have to restart from a zero base. We need to make a bigger step. But the comparison and the linkage of those I thought is especially important because it really is our kids that climate action is most important to. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Joaquim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just, I think I heard this. I must not have had enough coffee today, but you did say that this credit is gone after 2027?
Yes.
Representative Brand.
Madam Chair, Representative Joaquim, yes.
Representative Joaquim.
Madam Chair, thank you. And just a quick reminder, and I appreciate Representative Pinto talking about the needed link too, but the bill we were talking about with the tax credit, that goes on and is not cut off after 2027. So there's a little bit of difference there.
Thank you, Representative Joaquim. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question of the bill's author and maybe fiscal staff, but why was this spaced out at the $150,000 and $75,000 reason or income levels? And I've been trying to Google it, but I think you're talking about 10% or maybe 15% of married families that are over that. Again, why was it phased out when it seems to me the idea behind the bill is to encourage people, everyone, right, to purchase things that are energy efficient. So why would it matter as a bill's author whether they're what income level they are?
We'll go first to Representative Brand and then see if there's some staff follow up on that.
Yeah, I would actually refer to Mr. Clayman on that. You know, I think it's from my standpoint, what I was looking at is what the federal legislation talks about in terms of limits. And then also looking at past history when it comes to what was talked about last year in a bipartisan way.
Mr. Clayman, do you have anything to add?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I guess I just say that this is just an income sensitivity provision that's in the bill there. And I guess the other question I have to look up that you asked was about, you know, the percentage of families, married couples that are over that threshold. I don't know the answer to that right now, but I could certainly look it up and get back to you. But otherwise, just income sensitivity.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just want to, again, point out, and I understand some of the incomes of it, but you're talking about a small portion of, I think, the public that is over this. And if the idea is to get people to do it, again, why would we care who those people are that do it? It just doesn't make sense. It's a fairness, I'll be honest.
All right, thank you for your comment, Representative Anderson. Next up, Representative Davids.
Thank you, and I hadn't caught that in originally reading through the bill there. But what the bill says is rich folks are free to pollute and destroy the planet through climate change, but us poor folks aren't allowed to do that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Olson B.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to kind of look at this. When we're talking about 50 million, then another 50 million, 62 million, 78 million over the next 4 years, you know, when they were talking, so Representative Brands talked a lot about this income or Inflation Reduction Act, and I just want to point all the members to last summer when they were talking about it. They were assuming it would be about $30.6 billion over 10 years worth of credits, and it turns out that that is potentially going to cost four times as much to the federal government. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't. I'm not saying that you know, no one, you know, but at a 30-to-1 phase out, we're looking at individuals that married jointly filing. That's $210,000 per year income level that would have some benefit from making these expenses. This could, in fact, cost us like what the federal government is seeing, where it's going to be four times as expensive. This could, in fact, not be 48.8. It could be 200 million and 200 million and 240 million and then 280 million. So that could be potentially very expensive. I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. I'm not saying we should. I'm just saying it could be potentially very expensive.
All right, Representative Smith.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on a couple things that was said. First of all, Representative Pinto said that most of us won't be around when this happens. I'm hoping I'll be around when there's a lot of those, so a little younger. I will say, sorry, I had to go younger. After my side before I did what happens here. I would just like to say there's an interesting exchange Representative Davids had where we were berating the fact that Tesla owners were going to get these tax credits. And then when we learned in the bill that we did actually make sure that it wasn't going to rich people, then we were complained about that rich people were getting tax credits. So to me, that seems like a really roundabout way of just saying that we don't want these tax credits to exist. But the idea is that this is an impending crisis, and that if we don't spend this money now in the form of tax credits, make ourselves more efficient, it's going to cost us a lot more in the long run. And I will even say there were a lot of people 10 years ago, when I was in high school, that was saying we should start doing these kind of things, and wasn't done. And that's why this is becoming more and more expensive, is because we've dragged our feet in doing this kind of thing. So I understand we have to be responsible about this. So I think this is a good discussion to have. But at the same time, you know, we have to have these programs. And this is a small piece of a much larger program that we have to do to act on this issue. But just wanted to point out some of those things. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Smith, for your comments on the bill and calling us all old. We appreciate it. Point taken.
Just Representative Pinto.
Fair enough.
Everyone else here is very young.
And beautiful and handsome and all the rest. To Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to respond because my name was invoked. And I just want to point out that, first of all, I don't really believe this will end in 2027. But if it does, over these next 4 years, the differential of $40 million and how that would impact our kids, current kids who are struggling to read, for the next 4 years of $40 million extra going into the education credit versus this, I think the return on investment would be much more substantial. And as, you know, the representative who just spoke pointed out, this is part of a much larger effort that all of you are doing on climate change, just like there is a lot of other education spending. And so I am for the transition to renewables, but I just think we need to pay attention to the amount we're putting into this when there are other needs for low-income families that I think are a higher that I think they would say are a higher priority. So thank you.
Right. Representative Davids.
And thank you, Madam Chair. My name was invoked also, and pretty soon we will start to learn that you don't say names because that gives them the right to speak. And to anyone who would say such a thing, and I won't mention the names, if you're looking for consistency, you came to the wrong place. You're going to be sorrowfully disappointed.
I thank my colleague for pointing out that we're all hypocrites in this place. So, no, you said it very nicely. Okay, so I'm not seeing any other members' names on the list. I'll do one last call before we go to our author for some closing comments. Thank you for this discussion. I do just appreciate, you know, like we're all, as we move forward with our bill, we're going to be, we live in a limited world, and we're going to have to be making those decisions about where to invest the public's dollars. And so we take that very seriously. So I think... members for bringing that up and pointing us toward that. So, Representative Brand, any closing comments?
Just to close, I thank the committee for the opportunity to have a conversation. I appreciate the conversation we had. You know, I think that the tax committee, anytime you present the bill in tax committee, it's the most fun. Not trying to get extra points here, but honestly, it's a great committee, and we do have some real legitimately good conversations, and I appreciate that. It's a great bill. I hope it's included. Thank you.
Excellent. And with that, Representative Brand renews his motion, and House File 810, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. All right, that's Tax Committee for the week. Thank you for coming, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Thank you, Madam
with that, we are adjourned.